This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. People with disabilities can get federal help, but there's a really low asset limit, $2,000. State Treasurer Mike Frericks says some parents worry about that.
She was scared of the day that her son would outlive her. Now, that's the exact opposite of most parents.
Hear about a new program to allow those with disabilities to save money in a way that won't jeopardize federal support. Charlie Schlenker has the interview. During an edition of Animal House, find out how the Normal Public Library's Pages and Paws program benefits young readers. Laura Kennedy has that story. And newly re-elected Mayor Terry Renner is in the studio to talk about speed limits, truck routes, the budget, and the 2017 municipal election. All of that, plus a GLT News update on the way. It's April 11th, 2017. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. The Bloomington City Council approved some traffic control measures during their regular meeting and approved the 2018 budget. The council lowered the speed limit on a southwest side road and limited truck traffic in the central part of the city. The 2018 budget stands at just over $214 million. In the studio to talk about speed limits, truck traffic, the budget, is newly re-elected Mayor Terry Renner. Terry, thanks for your time on Sound Ideas today.
Great to be back.
The speed limit will shift from 40 miles an hour to 30 on Fox Creek Road west of Oakland. You visited this area. What did you see?
I go there a lot, but most recently I went out there at night. And
specifically to look at the road and the traffic.
Specifically to look at the road and the traffic. And especially if you had in the apartment complex on the other side of Fox Creek, the bridge, you have people coming over, sometimes younger children, 8, 10, 12 year olds, walking across a very, very dangerous area to the other side to go to the Casey's. And that is in itself is a problem. Now, we haven't had any fatalities, and there was somebody in opposition to this who said that, but we don't want to wait for a tragedy to act.
Is the speed limit changed? Does that encompass the Casey's area?
Yes, that's correct. But now, ultimately, once the Fox Creek Bridge is reconfigured and we are finished with it, it's possible we could revisit it because it's going to be consistent with our complete streets ordinance, and so there are going to be bike lanes and pedestrian paths that are separate from the main area there. But at this point, it just seems like a very dangerous situation and a tragedy waiting to happen, and we want to be proactive.
Alderman Jim Fruen supported the move to lower the speed limit, but expressed a concern last night. Here's Ward 9 Alderman Jim Fruen.
I'm very supportive. You know, it's a neighborhood issue. Let's do it. But let's look forward. And what is our direction? What are we going to do when every other neighborhood comes to us and says, I'd like to go 30? I've got kids on the street. I'm very respectful of all the comments. So I think it's a philosophical strategy session that people are going to have. Otherwise, these are one-off discussions. So very supportive of the motion.
Alderman Jim Fruen from the April 10th council meeting in the studio, as he is most Tuesdays following Monday evening council meetings, as Mayor Terry Renner. What's the next neighborhood? Who's going to ask next?
I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case, but if there is, if we seem to have an issue, if this becomes a problem, that's a different story. In this particular situation, it doesn't take an engineer or a rocket scientist to see why this needs to be lowered. And so it doesn't mean that we're going to go in certainly residential areas are by and large, they're 30 or 25 miles an hour throughout Bloomington and Normal.
Fruen made the point that this move was neighborhood driven, but what those in the neighborhood might not know is that the posted speed limit on any road has very little to do with the actual speed driven by motorists. If the city was serious about safety on this road, shouldn't we be seeing lane narrowing or curb bump outs or some other infrastructure design changes that would actually have an effect on how fast people drive.
Absolutely. I think that that's what we should be doing. And it may be as part of the Fox Creek Bridge repairs and changes that we wind up doing some of that as well.
So we may see. And what about other neighborhoods? If people come and say,
well, I think
because
a sign
is generally cosmetic.
Absolutely. And I think that's part, as we continue to repave our streets and redo much of our infrastructure and sewers as we move forward, we're doing this with complete streets in mind. That's part of our adopted policy moving forward. And that means not just automobiles. It means, obviously, bikes, pedestrians, mass transit. So, that is, I think, the future.
We've talked about the shift from the Safety Traffic Advisory Committee to the Transportation Advisory Commission, a commission with more citizen input and transparency.
Absolutely.
When will the council take action on that move? When do you think it's going to pop up on an agenda?
It should be fairly soon. We haven't juggled some of the items we still had. Mainly, we had to worry about the budget, which we got last night. If it had been postponed or if there had been some problem with the budget, we would have had to have acted on the 24th. Of April, because that's our last actual meeting. So it will be fairly soon. It's actually been languishing for quite a while. And by fairly soon, I would assume if it's not in April, probably won't be April, but it'll probably be May.
The town of Normal has considered lowering all default speed limits. These would be speed limits where it's not signed to 25 miles an hour. There's a worldwide move called proposal called 20 is Plenty. Do you think the city of Bloomington might consider something like that, where you lower the unmarked default speed limit to something lower than 30?
I don't think so, but again, I haven't really circled back with the council on that particular issue. There's some reasons, some people would really resist anything below 30, and we know that, for example, on Washington and Grove, many people were trying to get 25 mile an hour speed limits.
Well, these would be unmarked areas, places where there are no signs.
No, so. I'm just using that as an example that there were. Some in the neighborhood wanted 25, some vehemently did not. Going below 30, you're going to have more conflict perhaps within the neighborhood than in Fox Creek, where the neighbors were almost unanimous in going from 40 to 30.
That's Mayor Terry Renner. The community's mayors join us following their council meetings. Next week, you'll hear from Town of Normal Mayor Chris Coos. Let's stay on traffic and talk trucks for a moment. While the council decided to hold off on a comprehensive truck route policy at a previous meeting, they did take action last night on a specific roadway Monday evening. What road and why?
It's a Clinton Boulevard, not Clinton Street. And there's a difference. When Clinton Street, 150, hits Empire, right? Then it becomes a boulevard, and it's a historic district, one of the few in our community, one of the few throughout the state that has its
grassy median.
Exactly. And so the residents had been experiencing an increase in truck traffic, and there's really no reason whatsoever why people who are driving trucks, regardless of where they're going, at least if they're going on Clinton, if they're to go over to Main Street, you can make a right turn and have fewer stoplights to get to Main Street. So it seemed as if the burden, if there was a burden on the trucks, is minimal, and the burden to the citizens seemed quite substantial. And so I strongly supported this. I obviously will be signing those documents probably later today or tomorrow, because it was passed the council last night.
This discussion has been going on for almost 2 years now.
That's correct.
On Clinton.
That's correct.
Is that too long to actually make that decision about that kind of binary decision? Trucks are on it or trucks are off of it?
I think the city of Bloomington, we're getting our act together, but quick, decisive action has not been part of our culture until recently. And that doesn't mean that it's still part of our culture. It's just we have been able to move quickly and decisively in some things, but that's not our standard operating procedure. Yeah, two years is ridiculous.
Would the future Transportation Advisory Commission, do you think, help move those kinds of things along? Would that be your hope?
Absolutely. That would be my hope. And it certainly couldn't take longer. So I think with citizen input, and having also having an Open Meetings Act provisions in the law, essentially apply to this commission, I think is really important. And I have to, my hat's off to Alderwoman Burgess for bringing this forward. And so we will be acting on it. Again, it shouldn't be any later than May.
Can you remind me why the alderman didn't decide to move forward on a comprehensive truck route plan and decided to address it piecemeal like this instance?
Well, I think it's because that is much more complicated, And we would certainly have to coordinate, obviously, with Normal and the county and IDOT. It's a much more complicated process. So if there was something that seemed like a no-brainer, and in this case, the Clinton Boulevard seemed, I mean, that was even 9-0, right? So we... That seemed like it was a clear thing that any comprehensive analysis would not be sending trucks down Clinton Boulevard.
Clinton Boulevard was 9-0. Lowering the speed limit on Fox Creek Road was 9-0. It was an 8-1 vote on the budget. Should this budget, first tell me what you think the pluses and minuses are, the high points and the low points of this budget for you as mayor?
Well, certainly the most important thing, of course, that it's balanced and that we have no tax or fee increases and we're living within our means and we're upping the ante in spending money on street resurfacing, which is really important. We've got money in there for a much, much smaller amount, of course, but for an at-risk youth summer job program, which is really, really critical in terms of helping to reduce crime or to keep people out of the system. So I think there's some good points of the budget. The bad point of the budget is what I absolutely agree with Alderman Scott Black on, is that is expanding the size of the sewers out toward the Grove.
Well, let's talk about that. Are you supportive of Ward 7 Alderman Scott Black's plans to offer an amendment to eliminate a sewer oversizing project on the far west side?
Absolutely. And let's be clear, we're not violating an agreement on the Grove subdivision. This is because at some point, as Jim Karch had mentioned, 20 or 30 years down the line, there might be more growth out there. And that's not consistent with our comprehensive plan, where we are attempting to have infill and trying to make sure that we're a more sustainable city for the future. And it's not consistent with that. And also be clear, this would not affect the existing Grove subdivision. This is the possibility that 13,000 acres north of the Grove subdivision someday might develop, and those 13,000 acres are not in the city of Bloomington. So this is the essence of sprawl from my perspective. I am still considering maybe even line item vetoing this, but at the end of the day, the budget did pass. Alderman Scott Black voted for it. We do know that this is large enough a large enough expenditure, $300,000, before it was actually implemented, would have to come back to the council. So I had to kind of weigh my options and talk to people on the council. So what I may do is just sign this document because I know I can potentially exercise a veto at a later point if it's necessary. But absolutely, I think that $300,000 needs to be spent on existing homes, existing residents, rather than the phantom that someday growth might happen in areas that aren't even in our city right now. I mean, I think it's preposterous.
So the comprehensive plan, which developed out of the Bring It On Bloomington process, that's a 20-year document, right?
Yes. And so at this point, again, it's not just consistent with the comprehensive plan. It's consistent with what I said I ran on in 2013 and this election. People want to live far out. That's fine. But we should not be encouraging sprawl. We see how expensive that is in terms of delivering services, and 911 response times are very high when you're up to nearly 10 miles away from the city hall.
So how did this proposal end up in the budget? This $300,000 for the oversizing
project.
This
would have been recommended by staff. I'm assuming that it was supported by the engineers and Jim Karch
and Public Works. So
Public Works.
I guess that begs the question. Is Public Works either on board with or familiar with the comprehensive plan?
I would assume that they would be in favor of that. Now, again, I'm puzzled by this as well. And, I can understand why somebody might say, well, you don't want to dig up people's property someday in the future if you need to. Well, that's true. But this is not an area that is even in the city of Bloomington right now. And it's not consistent with our long-term goals of being sustainable and trying to prevent sprawl. We want smart growth. This is not smart growth.
Do you imagine that $300,000 will be plowed back into the city's core then?
Absolutely. To existing places. Let's fix our existing sewers. We've got a $141 million price tag for the long term for fixing our sewers. Let's take this $300,000 and put it toward that, not for some hypothetical future development that, frankly, is probably very undesirable.
And that land would have to be annexed, correct?
That land would have to be annexed. I mean, this is... Frankly, I was actually very surprised that this wasn't required by the agreement that we had over the Grove subdivision. And again, the residents of the Grove, let's be clear, this would not help them or affect them in any way. This is, and that's why we want to make sure that the Grove is not a political football. This is just a situation for possible future growth that's not even in the city.
Most Tuesdays following Monday evening council meetings, Sound Ideas welcomes the community's mayor. Mayors in the studio is Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner. The election is over. Deep sigh of relief.
Oh, yes. This was the first time that I had ever...
You have some free time back?
I don't have any free time quite yet.
You've reallocated your time?
There's still a lot of post-election things that I had put off. Today I just had my tax, dealing with my taxes. And so, no, it was the first time that I had ever run for mayor, which is an arduous task, been mayor, and try also to be, you know, a university professor and be effective in that. And so I definitely was feeling it. But and it was also the most nasty, acrimonious campaign, I think, that I've been involved in, certainly that I've been involved in for mayor. And obviously, five candidates, you started out with, we had petition challenges that were just ridiculous and frivolous challenges. And yeah, I'm very glad it's over. And I think we got a great council. The one thing that I would point out, in the last three election cycles in the city of Bloomington, 2013, 2015, 2017 now, contested races, those who want to torch and burn down City Hall have lost everything. And so I think at the end of the day, the people have spoken, not just in mayoral races, but in the individual wards. And that is, you know, we're all residents of Bloomington. We all want some amenities. We're being fiscally responsible. We've got a very a hefty reserve. We've got a very low per capita debt. We're being fiscally responsible. So taking a torch to Parks and Rec or the BCPA, whatever, that does not seem to have a lot of traction.
You're interpreting it that way, that this was a choice between amenities or just filling potholes.
Essentially, many of the candidates...
Not that you couldn't have both. They're not mutually exclusive.
You can't, right. And at the end of the day, people, frankly, making false promises. They can't possibly deliver on... you can't... One of the candidates talked about, you know, repealing sales taxes and doing all... Okay, well, then what are we not going to do? We're going to have to lay off firefighters and police and public works members because... there's not enough money in Parks and Rec to do that.
Anything you would have done differently? Any Monday morning quarterbacking?
In terms of the election?
Yeah. Are you happy with... I mean, the results, of course, speak for themselves. But
there's always more things that you could do and perhaps maybe have phrased things differently. There's nothing immediately. There are a lot of mistakes that I made as mayor that I would certainly, want to go back and fix.
Some of those came up during the campaign.
Absolutely.
Former President George H.W. Bush famously talked about political capital and spending some of that after his reelection. What about you? Where are you ready to invest your time as mayor and put, you know, your position as mayor on the line with projects in Bloomington?
Essentially the things that I've been fighting for all along. I mean, we've got complete streets as a policy, but now as we're moving forward, making sure that we have a sustainable city, that we have that we are a multimodal city for the future, that we have strong, the never-ending process of trying to create jobs in our historic core, downtown Bloomington.
Let's talk about downtown Bloomington. Let's talk about the anchor that the plan calls for downtown Bloomington. Where are we? It has been, the discussion has been centered on a hotel. Where do you see that heading in the near future?
Okay. In the near future, I'm not totally sure. We are searching for an anchor project, but once we had our downtown plan passed, because you're not going to get anybody to invest without a plan, we've got our downtown plan passed and we got the money for the Route 66 Visitor Center. Once that happened, there was lots of increase in private investment. The almost all of that increase in private investment was focused on either the front or center building or the area across from the Coliseum, and almost all of it was dealing with a hotel, conference center, and parking garage. Now, that doesn't mean that that has to be the case, but certainly that's something that we're going to be looking at. We also are moving on the southeast area on the library. We're trying to acquire other strategic properties. We will fairly soon be sending out a request for proposals for the Electrolux property that we have in the north part of downtown, or really just past the northern edge of downtown.
In the next 4 years, though, something really should happen with that front and center building. Will it survive? Is it in a condition to sit there for another 4 years and have nothing happen?
I would hope. I'm going to do anything and everything I possibly can to make sure that that's not an issue. But at the end of the day, I do have to have at least five votes on the council to move forward on.
Let's talk about the new council dynamic. Sure. The long time, sometimes lone no vote is gone.
Or will be on May 1st.
Will be on May 1st after the new council and incumbents are sworn in. Talk about the new dynamic. How do you see that moving forward?
I'm very excited about this. I think it'd be a totally new era. Even if you change one person in a group of nine, that makes a difference. With two, I think that will definitely make a difference, especially with the shift in Ward 1 between from Alderman Lauer to Alderman, Jamie Mathey. I think that will be huge. And we will, for the first time in the history of Bloomington, have a majority of women on the city council. But I'm very excited about these possibilities. Many of us have been coming together, even in the existing council, on a lot of issues. And so I think we can really put the pedal to the metal on fixing our streets infrastructure, revitalizing downtown, other underperforming areas. So those are the... all of the above is what I'm pushing for.
You've reached out to Jamie Mathey and
we've already met. Yeah, we've already met, and we're going to continue to meet.
Okay.
As they're moving forward. And actually, Alderwoman Diana Howman is putting together essentially an orientation for new council members, and that will be on Monday evening.
Okay, Mayor Renner will join newly elected and re-elected aldermen in a swearing-in ceremony on May 1st. Terry, thanks for joining us.
Could I say one other thing?
Sure, one more thing.
One other thing, and that is we are our very own Pepsi Ice Center is in the running for one of the top 10 facilities in the entire country. So go online and vote. We will get $150,000 extra if we win that contest.
Where can people find that website?
Actually, contact me in City Hall, but I'm not quite sure the actual website.
All right.
But if you contact me at City Hall, we'll get that information.
And your email and contact information is online at...
Absolutely. Or call City Hall, and then we can tell you how to get a hold of that.
All right. Terry, thanks. Next week, you'll hear from Town of Normal Mayor Chris Koos. You're listening to Sound Ideas.
Support for GLT comes from Justin M. Boyd, Country Financial Representative, building relationships while supporting and serving the community. Justin offers life insurance options designed to protect your family and leave a lasting legacy. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. People with disabilities who struggle economically can lose federal benefits if their assets exceed $2,000. A new program that began in January in Illinois allows a special savings account of up to $100,000. State Treasurer Mike Frericks is at Illinois Wesleyan University this evening to talk about the program. GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with Frericks about the savings plan, including the provision that a person acquire their disability before the age of 26.
So there could be someone who is 60 years old who has had disability their entire life who would still qualify for these accounts.
Why the age limit?
That is by the federal government. We didn't choose that. As a matter of fact, we are looking to increase that age amount. We think that it's wrong, that it's unfair, that if two young people are serving our country in a war zone and they are both disabled by the same IED blast, if one is 26 years old in one day, that person will not have the same opportunities as someone who is 25 years old in 11 months. And so we are working within Congress to raise that number.
Well, that sounds like it ought to be a no-brainer. Is lifting the age limit a matter of hoop jumping, or will there be resistance because of budgetary implications?
There's a monetary reason. The higher you increase that, the more it costs the federal government revenue. But we look at this as a question of fairness. What we want to do is make sure that people in similar circumstances have similar access to a savings program that's going to make their lives better.
What can you use the ABLE funds for?
So money put into an account, that's invested in an account, can be taken out for anything disability-related expense. What we know is they cannot use it to purchase alcohol or gambling, but so many things that an individual has to use as a result of their disability.
How is that monitored?
Yeah, it is monitored by the IRS. So they're subject to compliance audits, but we don't anticipate a lot of use in this program. What we're trying to do is make it easy for families to save for their kids' future, to give them a brighter future, and to not put roadblocks in their way.
How big will this program get?
We anticipate somewhere between 30,000 and 40,000 individuals in the state will benefit from our ABLE savings program.
Who can give to the accounts?
family member or the individual can contribute to these accounts. There are some individuals who will not have the ability to earn money. We anticipate their parents or their grandparents will contribute to their accounts. But we have some individuals with a disability who are still able to work, and they can deposit their paychecks into these accounts.
The program started at the end of January. What's the reception so far?
I have traveled around the state, and wherever I go, if you find someone who has a loved one with a disability or blindness, they are excited about this. This gives them an opportunity to save something for their special person in their life, to give them a brighter future. Currently, they can't have more than $2,000 in assets and still receive their federal disability payments. These accounts will allow families to save up to $100,000. I have one story I can tell you. We held a press conference in Illinois, and a mother showed up, and she told the story about how she was scared of the day when her son would outlive her. Now, that's the exact opposite of most parents.
$2,000 in assets is pretty restrictive. It's not like you're going to claw anybody out of poverty with $100,000.
No, but it is a big difference to these families. Right now, they have had to leave their child in abject poverty in order to have the federal benefits, disability benefits, that they need. What that means is I have talked to parents out there who have counseled their parents, don't give any money to your grandchild for a holiday or a birthday. Families have written children out of their wills because it would take away their federal disability benefits. And that is wrong. No parent wants to leave their child behind with nothing. But that is what the federal government has forced a lot of them to do.
It occurs to me there's a separate question then to address about the eligibility limits themselves.
Exactly, but that would have to be addressed at the federal level. What we're focused on are the things we can control. The federal government has given us the ability to set up these ABLE accounts. We are doing that. We're doing it by working with other states. And this is somewhat without precedent. We're working with red states and blue states coming together to tackle an issue. By doing it together, we're going to offer a better program.
Were there difficulties getting this up and running?
When we first started talking to investment managers, they weren't interested in working as an account because they said the pool size was too small. So we called a bunch of states together. We met and we agreed that if we pooled all of our resources, if we worked together, red states and blue states, from the East Coast to the West Coast, we could offer a better product for all of our constituents. And so what we have is a program that will have the lowest fees in the country. And we accomplished that by working together with other states, by working with treasurers, some of which agree with me and some of which don't. We put our disagreements aside to do what was right for our constituents.
What's the pool size in these 14 states then?
So we go from about 40,000 people projected in Illinois to nearly 500,000 as part of our National ABLE Alliance across the country.
Can other states be added later?
The really great thing about our contract, other states have interest in joining us because they see our low rates, but we left ourselves the opportunity, the ability to lower fees even further when we brought more states into our coalition.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with State Treasurer Mike Frerichs about the ABLE Fund. There was a hiccup, a pretty significant issue, in fact, when the state-overseen 529 fund Bright Start began. That's a similar kind of program. Fees were too high. At least one of the funds tanked early on. Now, that's been rectified since then. But what have you done to prevent a similar thing from happening with this fund?
Well, we give families a variety, a robust variety of investment options. And we also have fought very hard to make sure they have the lowest fees in the country. And as we attract more states to our National ABLE Alliance, we're going to lower those fees even further.
What happens if the investments are good and the value rises above the 100 grand limit?
No, you can continually put money in this account. You're limited to $14,000 per year, because that is the federal gifts limit. But every year you can put that amount in. As you take money out, you can put money back in. You can put in over $100,000. When your account is over $100,000, you will lose your federal disability benefits until it goes it down back below 100,000. But this gives families a lot more flexibility. Currently, they have to do that with any assets in an account around $2,000. Giving up to $100,000 allows them to better manage their assets. Some families want to use this to leave extra money for their kids without having to set up a special needs trust. It would cost potentially thousands of dollars in legal fees. So for those people, the real impact is going to be down the road, but immediately these families have greater certainty. They lose some of their anxiety, knowing that they're on a good path.
Can someone have one of these accounts and have a special needs trust?
Yes. So for those who've already set up a disability trust, they can use this to supplement that, and it gives them a little more flexibility. I mean, I think the actual phrase of special needs trust or family trust, they're different trusts. I'm not an attorney, so.
How fast do you think enrollment numbers will bring the fee structure down to what you call optimal levels?
We've negotiated. If only, I don't want to say this, only two people had signed up, the fees stay the same. But as we sign up more states and increase that pool, the fees will go down. They can't go up. We worked on this for a long time. We put out a competitive RFP. We negotiated very diligently. We negotiated very hard. And I think we've got a very good deal for the citizens of the state of Illinois and for all of the citizens of the state that are participating in the National ABLE Alliance.
And what sort of oversight will you have over the fund to make sure the fund managers don't go astray and erode capital?
Yeah, we've learned lessons from mistakes made in perhaps previous administrations, and so we have regular check-ins with our investment manager, and they're required to provide us detailed information routinely. So we're going to keep an eye on this because we are the ones who have responsibility for the program.
State Treasurer Mike Frerich spoke with GLT's Charlie Schlenker. Frerich will explain the ABLE program at 6:30 this evening in the Illinois Wesleyan University Center for Natural Sciences, Room 101. You can learn more at illinoisable.com. You are listening to Sound Ideas. Ahead, it's a conversation with Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth. That's still to come during Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Central Illinois has its own twist on a traditional Indian festival, one that aims to be as inclusive as it is fun. Laura Kennedy has more in this edition of the GLT Datebook.
Exit 167 Management Group presents the Festival of Colors, coming up Saturday, April 15th from 11:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the McLean County Fairgrounds in Bloomington. Organizers Leons Philip and Vinod Nambiar say this is the second year for the festival. And while this type of event is an Indian tradition, Nambiar says they want everyone to feel welcome and a part of the Festival of Colors.
We want to focus on the fun element, and we are mainly focusing this specifically for friendship, unity, and togetherness, bringing people together. This community has always been, and I foresee it always will be, a community of people coming together for everything. We have been very blessed to be living in such a community where we value each other, and we value each other's perspective. When it comes to fun, there is no boundaries.
Let's talk about the event. This is actually the second year that you guys have been doing it. How did it go the first year?
Well, it's good that you asked because we were very successful the first year, which was last year.
And you guys didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, having been doing this in town as a band, singing in multiple venues, this was the first time we actually went out as an event management group doing a festival. The great thing was we had over 1,100 people.
Did you expect that many?
No, it was obviously a pleasant surprise for us. The mix of people that came was from, we had so many residents from Lono, from Bloomington Normal. We had people from students, especially from Bradley University, from Peoria. We had folks from Decatur. We had a few people that came from Springfield and Champaign as well.
Our patrons also suggested that, it would be so much fun. It could be done outside as well, so we don't feel congested in any way. And that is the reason that we postponed this event from March to April. We thought to do it outdoors, let the weather be better. And we are doing it in a big outdoor, the McLean County Fairgrounds. under a 55,000 square footage tent that we are putting together. So it's going to be a combination of outdoor and indoors. If people wanted to do it outdoors, they're more than welcome to do it, or they'll be housed under a tent.
Let's reassure people so they're thinking, well, colors, what do you mean by colors? These are colored, it's colored cornstarch that gets tossed in the air?
Yes, it is actually 99% cornstarch, very safe for your skin. There's instructions, obviously, on the packets that we supply, is multiple colors. You've got, we've got your all colors of the rainbow.
It's organic.
And it's organic, definitely. So that helps with getting it off the skin and the clothes.
And last year we had no complaints, zero complaints from anybody. Of course, if you're allergic to corn, this is not the place to be.
If you're allergic to corn, you need not be in central Illinois, because that just wouldn't work out.
Yeah.
You're going to have a DJ. Tell me about the kind of music you guys are going to have played.
We always typically play in such an event where we are trying to be inclusive in all ways. We have played Indian to Latin to Western, any music that is popular. Upon request, the DJ has been playing it. So it was fun for all. It's not specifically aligned to a particular kind of music.
So all ages are welcome at this? Kids are welcome too. This is what you're considering a family event.
Correct. It's not just a family event. It's actually an event for all, because there's really no age limitation. Kids 5 and under are free.
Ooh,
which is a good thing for the parents that are on a budget. The tickets are $7 at this point at the early bird specials. They will go up to $10 once we hit a certain mark. The last time, the most feedback we got was that the kids had so much fun with the colors. The families had a ball because they had all the space and the kids could run around. And technically, there was supervision all around. So it was a safe environment for the kids. The singles had also a lot of fun because there was the DJ music, there was food, and then there was the colors, the people to talk to. So it was a really amazing experience last year.
Are there any do's or don'ts we need to be aware of?
Well, I think the most important do is to bring your smile on, because you're going to be interacting with a lot of people, you know, seeing new faces. So always smile without boundaries.
Yeah. And I would add on to that, you know, keep your inhibitions at home. It's all about knowing new people. Don't be surprised if an unknown person walks up to you, you know, say happy Festival of Colors or say happy Holi and put some color on your forehead. And that is how it goes. And, you know, with that smile on your face, you are making new friends.
That's Vinod Nambiar and Leonce Philip from Exit 167 Management Group. The Festival of Colors is Saturday, April 15th from 11:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the McLean County Fairgrounds in Bloomington. I'm Laura Kennedy.
The organizers of the event recommend you bring a change of clothes with you for afterwards. You're listening to a popular song that often gets played during the festival in India. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM, GLT, and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.
Every time I tune into GLT, I learn something new. Hi, I'm Ryan Kerr, a GLT contributing listener, and I recently learned about research to help reduce the long-term effects of concussions. Researchers at the University of Illinois are experimenting with cooling helmets to reduce body temperature after a concussion. I love knowing that steps toward improving this serious problem are being made in my own backyard. The GLT Fund Drive is underway. Help pay for programming and everything GLT does with your contribution now. Click on donate at WGLT.org.
If you've never contributed before, remember GLT and NPR are only here for you because other listeners once got the message that GLT and NPR depend on listener financial support. They stepped up and made their first-time contribution. Right now, we're asking you to step up and make a contribution of your own. Do it now at WGLT.org. It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Now that the Gorsuch Supreme Court nomination is secure and he's been sworn in as a justice, members of the United States Senate are turning to other matters. Illinois' junior senator is beginning her fourth month on the job. IPR's Victor Yaling spoke with former U.S. Representative Tammy Duckworth via Skype.
What do you see as the major differences between your role in the House and your current position in the Senate?
What I'm really enjoying is getting to serve the entire state. You know, I lived in DeKalb for a good 12, 14 years and then moved in towards the suburbs of Chicago. I served statewide as a state director of Veterans Affairs. before I ran for the House seat, and my population that I served dropped down to just one little congressional district, and now I get to serve the entire state again. So my role is to really support and fight for the depth and breadth of issues around Illinois. I get to work on ag policy again, for example, along with manufacturing policy. And when I talk about education, it affects the entire state. And so that's been the biggest change. But it's a welcome change because it's a little bit like going home again for me.
You mentioned, of course, your connection with the military and the positions you held relative to veterans. What kind of attention are you giving to veterans' issues as a senator?
Veterans issues are my life's work. I will be working on veterans causes for as long as I'm able to get up and get out of bed every day. The first things I've worked on have really involved the fact that the Affordable Care Act, a replacement plan, was going to result in a tax increase on veterans and a reduction in services for veterans had it gone through. And I was glad to be able to bring attention to the fact that it was going to exclude about 8 million veterans from accessing the subsidies for health care. The work that I do on veterans is it's always going to involve veterans' homelessness, the needs of women veterans, expanding care at the VA so that we are able to meet all veterans' needs, along with, you know, there's just all sorts of stuff that comes up that you don't think about, and suddenly they're there. For example, the needs of veteran entrepreneurs to be able to access special funding so that they can start and run their businesses.
What do you see as the most important issues that you are facing and dealing with in the Senate?
Well, first and foremost, we need to look at the nation's budget. It affects everything, and the budget that the president put forward is one that isn't going to allow for us to do so many of the things that he promised he would do, but also that we need to get done. For example, we desperately need an infrastructure investment bill to expand infrastructure program. But the budget that the president put forward actually has a cut in funding to a transportation grant program, the Tiger Grants, that have funded projects all across Illinois. I also think that we should be investing in education and in healthcare research. Both of those are cut under the current proposed budget. So I think first and foremost, we have to work on the budget in order to be able to afford to spend money where we need to, but also to cut the waste that also exists in government spending.
What's your view on the immigration issue and how those issues should be handled?
Well, I think immigration should be a priority. We need a comprehensive immigration reform bill. Not only is it a law enforcement and a national security issue, I mean, to have 11 million undocumented persons living in the United States is not exactly the best situation for our national security. I'd rather all of those people have an opportunity to gain some sort of legal status, come out of hiding so we know where they are, who they are. I also think that we need immigration reform for our economy. Studies have shown that comprehensive immigration reform would put about $1 trillion back into our economy over a 10-year period. So I hope that we can move forward in a bipartisan way. But I got to be honest, the way it is in Washington right now, I think we've got some fights that we're going to have to go through before we even get to immigration. But whatever happens, I'm going to fight as hard as I can to protect the Dreamers and to protect the DACA kids while we wait to try to get immigration reform moving forward.
Illinois Junior U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth speaking with IPR's Victor Yaling. It's Sound Ideas on GLT. I'm Mike McCurdy. Reading is fundamental and even more fun if you have a canine pal close by listening in. Laura Kennedy has more on a program that has dogs helping kids with literacy in this edition of Animal House.
On a cool Saturday morning at Normal Public Library, 9-year-old Cooper Rutledge has a book all picked out. Why the Sea is Salty, a Tale from Korea.
Retold by Rosie Dickens, illustrated by Sarah Rojo.
But this book isn't just for Cooper. He aims to share it, reading aloud to an audience of one.
Long ago, the sea wasn't salty. It is like it is today. Once, it tasted sweet.
An audience with sympathetic eyes, eager ears, and a glossy golden coat.
This millstone belonged to a great king. Most millstones are used for making
Cooper
flowers.
Cooper is taking part in Pages and Paws, a monthly program at the Normal Public Library that allows youngsters to practice their reading skills with a therapy dog companion. The program was established a little over a year ago. Julia Martin is the library's tech and programming librarian for the Children's Department. And she says the purpose of this program is to give the kids a chance to practice their reading skills in a non-judgmental environment.
When they're reading to a dog isn't judging them. It's not correcting them or, you know, eagerly waiting for it. It's just patiently waiting for them to read the words and just tell the story. It also adds a comfort level to them that they may not get when they're reading to adults or other, even their peers.
So far, Martin says the reaction has been enthusiastic. Kids, books, and dogs just make a great combination. And Martin says the dogs aren't just any canines. They're specially trained, certified therapy dogs.
They do have to go through an observation process, which I'm actually going through with one of my dogs right now. So, yeah, it consists of a test where they have to be approached by a stranger. They have to walk past another dog calmly, things like that. Then they have to go, we've been going to nursing homes, and they see how they interact with people, how they interact with all the hustle and bustle. So they're just very calm and have been taught and been observed to be calm consistently. As well as the insurance, all of our dogs are certified through Therapy Dogs Incorporated. They do offer insurance to all of their therapy dogs, which helps us on our end.
One of the therapy dog handlers at Pages and Paws is Kathy Yelton.
And my other part of the team is Harley. He is my 9-year-old golden retriever who we've been certified therapy dog team for 6 years. He was only 3 when we started. He's always just been an extremely mellow and caring dog, and I started through just obedience training and started him as puppy and went all the way up, and we got our canine good citizen. And then it was kind of like, what do I do next? And somebody at the dog training club at Town and Country Kennel Club said, you know, he would be a great therapy dog. And I didn't really know what that meant. So I kind of looked into it, and basically to become certified for therapy dog, you have to go to visits at nursing homes and take tests and all these other things. And our first visit at the nursing home, we'd never been before, and he walked right up to this man sitting off by himself in a wheelchair, and he just laid his head right in the man's lap. And I was at the end of my little 4-foot leash feeling like I was intruding. And after a couple minutes, the man looked at me and he said, I really like him. And I said, he really likes you. And that's kind of my big eye-opening moment. You know, a light bulb went off saying, this is what we were meant to do.
Librarian Julia Martin says it's not just the kids' reading skills that improve.
The added benefits beyond reading extend to comfort levels with dogs, being around new people. The way we've got it set up is they come in the room and they're in there with the dog and the therapy dog handler. So, you know, it gives them a little bit of independence. We've had several kids who aren't necessarily dog people who come and do this and end up loving it. So I think it definitely adds to some comfort and ability to be in new situations as well.
Dog lover Abby Wheeler is a longtime library goer, first-time Pages and Paws participant.
I'm not nervous. I'm excited because I love dogs and I can't wait to see Harley.
Why do you particularly want to read to Harley?
Because Harley's a golden retriever and they're my favorite dogs.
What are you bringing today to read with Harley?
The Land of Stories, The Wishing Spell.
So is that a really good book? What's that about?
It's about Alex and Connor who live in the regular world and get sucked up in a book, and now they're in Land of Stories.
As for Cooper Rutledge, he's an old hand at this.
Because I really like dogs. I have a dog at home, and he's really nice, even though he's like 87 in dog years.
So are you somebody who likes to read a lot? Or
yes.
Did you like to read a lot before you started reading to the dogs, or did the dogs really make a difference for you?
I like to read a lot before I started reading to the dogs, and I decided maybe it would be a good chance to have some fun.
So what did you bring with you today to read?
I brought a book of Eric Carle's fables and a folk tale of Why the Sea is Salty.
Cooper's mom, Kelly, has noticed an improvement in Cooper's reading. And more.
Being here and reading with the dogs, reading in front of other people, gives him even more confidence. And then he goes to school and other places, and he's not nervous about talking or reading in front of other people.
Librarian Julia Martin says it's not just the kids that benefit. The therapy dog handlers find that this is a unique way to give back.
It's a great way to get out in the community and really make a difference. I mean, people just light up when you come, and it's great just to be able to do that and spend some time doing that for the community.
Martin hopes to continue the Pages and Paws program at the Normal Public Library. Its increasing popularity means participants will need to sign up early to get a slot to read to a friendly canine who's all ears and all fur. If you've got a hankering to relate a tale to an eager canine, consider the Animal House Pet of the Week. It's Apollo. This 2-year-old German Shepherd mix is a big goofball who just loves everybody he meets. Whether it's Bullfinch's mythology or the Percy Jackson books, Apollo is just the potential listener for you. You can find him at the Humane Society of Central Illinois. I'm Laura Kennedy.
See photos of the Pages and Paws program in action at the Normal Public Library at our website, wglt.org. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. Find the interviews and stories you heard today, thanks to Charlie Schlenker and Laura Kennedy, at our website, wglt.org. Also, thanks to Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner for his time today. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas and the interviews you hear. Share your thoughts about the show at facebook.com/WGLTFM or tweet, use the hashtag Sound Ideas. I'm at Mike McCurdy. We're all at WGLT News. This is GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.